Next up is the other Italian late substitute. Did he kick the ball after coming onto the field? This will be his first touch. Simone Zaza. And he's blazed it after an exaggerated run-up. Took an age to hit the ball. The ball hasn't come down yet.
And welcome to another Euro 2016 Sound of Football podcast with me, Graham Sibley, Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And Jan Bilton.
Hello.
Welcome back, Jan.
Thank you.
And now, well, we've been having lots of special guests, haven't we, over this tournament?
Yes, lots.
Yeah, and they've been really great, haven't
they? They've all been great.
And today we've got an extra special one.
Extra special.
And when I say special, I mean that in so many different versions of the word. We have, from the 200% podcast, Ed Carter.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Ed. How's your Euro 2016 been?
I've found the early stages to be fairly interminable. I'm very, very much still to be convinced about the benefits of a 24-team tournament.
Oh, right,
although, okay. I feel that, unfortunately, this is the way that football is going. But that said, my enthusiasm for the whole business was very much enlivened over the weekend. In fact, when it came to Monday morning, I'd forgotten what a terrible state the UK was in. Because I've had such a wonderful weekend watching excellent sport.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly you can get used to the smell of burning, isn't it?
It is. It's an amazing thing.
The gunfire shots just, you know, become ambient noise after a while.
It's just background, isn't it?
It just fades out.
Yeah, but it's lucky, you see, because we are here. We continue to go on. I know the 200% podcast has seemed to have gone into hibernation over the last couple of weeks. So it's a good job that we're picking up the slack. So
we were going to do one last Saturday, but we got very involved in Germany versus Italy, and that kiboshed that.
When you say very involved, that's
what we mean is out of our groups.
Involved out of your box, did you?
And obviously, with my only way to get home afterwards being a Southern Railways train, I didn't want to take too many risks on the last train back.
Yeah, international listeners won't have a clue what Southern Railways are, but needless to say, they're shit.
Imagine a big steaming pile of shit, and you're
that's
close.
Them.
Yeah, they made a great announcement today, though, because they announced that they were going to cut 15% of their services.
To make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so that everyone is fully aware of how shit they are.
Yeah, this is post-Brexit Britain, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
It's the start of the slide.
Yeah. Right, so anyway, we're going to talk about football. We're not going to talk about transport infrastructure. Of course, we're at the stage now where the semi-finals start tomorrow. And we've got the big semi-final of Portugal versus Wales. And we all predicted that one, didn't we, at the start of the tournament?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. Yes, I had it on my bracket.
I'm sure I said that Wales would avoid finishing bottom of the group.
No.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what I said.
I think you'll find that none of us said that Wales would finish bottom of the group.
Yeah.
I think I did, actually.
If I look on my official piece of paper, which Terry has ripped up into 1,400 pieces to try and get rid of the evidence, it would say otherwise. But I don't know. I'm going from memory. I mean, I wouldn't be so churlish as to bring up some audio from the prediction episode. Mm.
Mm. No, because otherwise you might then feel compelled to bring up the audio from last week's pod where you predicted that Belgium would beat Wales 3-0.
Yes, there is that. Yeah.
What about Wales? We should talk about Wales because we need to give them some love.
They're going to lose 3-0 to Belgium.
Do you think so?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I also predicted that Italy would go through as well.
You did, although you were almost absolutely right about that. And I predicted that as too, because usually Italy do go through against Germany.
And I also said Poland would go through as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not doing very well here, Chad. No, sorry. Actually, I leave you for a couple of weeks. No, I come back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything's wrong.
I really, really, actually, I thought just before the Iceland-France game, I thought France don't ever hope, because I said they'd go through and make up the rest of the semi-finals. How have Portugal got there? They haven't won a game in 90 minutes, have they?
Correct.
That's right.
They finished third in their group.
Well, exactly. I quite enjoyed the intricacies of the third place in the group thing. It was one of the things which made the 24-team format to be bearable, I think. That said, I am vexed by Portugal getting this far, but not because they finished third in the group, but because they've just been so awful. I can't remember. I cannot remember a Portuguese team in, I don't know, 20 years that has just been so full of just blokes. I'm used to these sort of bronzed, brill-creamed gods with wonderful names. And now they're just blokes, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if the rest of them have just let themselves go because, with old CR7 like in the limelight all the time. Maybe it's part of his contract. They say, you can't do anything with your hair.
It's possible. I think Nani has circumvented that to some extent. The player that I was particularly interested by in the Portugal team is Ricardo Quaresma, who's got tattoos on his eyes. Now, as far as I understand my prison tats, if you've got a teardrop under your eye, it means you've killed one person.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure that I saw under his eye during the penalty shootout, he's got a cross under one of his eyes, which I can only assume means that he's crucified one person.
I think that's how it works.
That's definitely what it means.
Well, his name actually means Lent.
Lent.
And I've been racking my brain for the last 4 days to try and come up with some kind of pancake pun to go to go with it. But obviously, he's a serial crucifier. Then is he?
He's definitely done. Well, I mean, one's enough. Really, it's fair to say that CR7 hasn't had an awful lot of luck on the cross.
Special guests in, you
that's
see.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
He has been rubbish. I have to say, I was enjoying his failure to score a goal and his obvious, tangible displeasure at the whole thing.
Hungary let the side down by actually allowing him to score a couple of goals, didn't they?
They did, and that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it was very unfortunate because they wouldn't have got through. And we would have spared ourselves this, but they've been absolutely atrocious. And the Poland game, I was covering for 200% live blog, and that quickly just descended into shopping lists because there was nothing doing. Nothing.
Poland were awful, weren't they?
Shopping list.
Nan is here with a shopping list of his own.
I've got two, actually.
Yeah. Is there anything on there about Portugal? What have you got to say for them?
I think the only thing that I liked about it is that that Sanchez, who I called out earlier in the series, if you like, as he impressed against England, was impressive for them there. But I think that was the best thing you could pick out of that. I have to say, though, I keep chuckling to myself every time you say CR7 because it makes him sound like some kind of Ford from the 1980s. Something white with lots of plastic bumperage.
I always think of a Croydon postcode. But, of course, there is no Croydon postcode CR7. But
No, he made sure of that.
Yeah, there was. It was Norbury.
Not anymore. Now. Yeah.
Bye-bye, Norbury.
You no longer exist. Well, you no longer get me in post, anyway. It was one to avoid that. But Poland were awful after we bigged them up.
Yeah. Mm.
And we thought, I thought they were potential finalists. And
really?
Yeah. I picked them. So, yeah, obviously my fault.
Naturally. I got them in a sweepstake, which wasn't my fault that I got them in a sweepstake, but perhaps there was a curse involved there.
Yeah.
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 I think what was disappointing is in the I think it was their previous game they went to penalties as well, didn't they, Poland? And they were brutal and exact with their penalties, and it was a real masterclass on how you can conduct yourself, or you should conduct yourself, when you're faced with such pressure. And then,
At the time,
turns out it was a fluke.
I thought that at the time that the Polish penalties that in that first penalty shootout were like German penalties.
Yeah.
I have had to, you know, I've had to back down on that one since.
We've all had to reappraise German penalties.
Better than German penalties.
But then again, I suppose we can talk about this game now because obviously Germany and Italy went to penalties and obviously had the most comical penalty taken of all time.
Zsa Zsa. Yeah. Yeah. That was the finest penalty ever taken.
Yeah, this is a man who obviously was desperate to have a meme made of himself.
He's a meme machine.
But he was brought on late doors in extra time, wasn't he? Presumably specifically to take a penalty.
That makes it even worse.
Makes it even better.
I believe it was his only touch of the ball in the entire game.
Yeah. So he had to get the most out of his run-up.
I was climbing across the ceiling when that happened. I have never experienced such euphoria watching a football match. It was wonderful.
I think it was his only touch of the ball. I saw a heat map of his participation on one of the papers, and it was basically just a line straight up to the centre spot and then walk straight across to the penalty spot, straight back to the centre spot, and then off.
That's even better than Stevie G's against Man U last season, isn't it? I thought that's great because that shows that because everyone's been going on about what a great master tactician Conte is, and obviously cracks in it there, isn't there?
There is. I've noticed more, and I know this has been going on for years and years, and it's a bit of a standard thing. But the kind of stammering run up for a penalty. I don't know whether I've just noticed it more in this tournament, but it's just becoming more and more prevalent. And then his was just the pinnacle I didn't even know what that was. I really don't.
But if he'd had a maypole, he'd have used it.
It was more like oh God, I forgot to have a pee before I came on the pitch. I think that's what he looked like, really.
Yeah, take your mind off it.
Yeah.
Oh. Or maybe he was trying to avoid the gaps or something on the floor. I don't know.
Superstition. I think Germany missed twice as many penalties as they have in all penalty shootouts they've ever been in.
Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, it was particularly shocking. Uncharacteristic of the German stereotype, wasn't it, of penalty shootouts.
Yeah.
The German national team in becoming likeable and with many attractive to watch players, I think they've lost a certain arrogance and steeliness and that lends itself to good penalty shootouts. You know, I think that when you've got Mesut Özil in your penalty shootout lineup, then you know anything could happen. I think that you could almost say it's a cultural shift. Yeah, we'll all look at Germany in a slightly different way after that glorious penalty shootout. But the great thing, of course, the thing is just to stick with the whole Gary Lineker thing, is, of course, they still won. So
yeah, they did. They still won.
I think that Zaza's penalty, though, as bad though it was, Thomas Muller's penalty was terrible. Not as funny.
it was quite funny.
But it was terrible. And then Schweinsteiger's was identical to Chris Waddle's from all those years ago as well.
He definitely pulled a Waddle, didn't he?
He did pull a Waddle. That's got to be a thing now, isn't it?
I'm not sure if I'm that comfortable saying pull the Waddle.
I don't know. It's wearing on me quite nicely.
Mm. Yeah.
The penalty shootout was a wonderful cherry on the top. It was a fascinating game to watch. It was one of those games where the pundits will talk about it being a genuinely fascinating match, which is usually the euphemism for awful. It actually was a genuinely fascinating match.
Yes.
And I think it was particularly notable once Italy scored their goal, which was in itself a remarkable penalty in that they get this penalty with 15 minutes to go to keep them in the European Championship, and they get their centre-half to take it, and he's never taken a penalty before. It's so Italian. And if you can imagine Gary Cahill doing that, he got a penalty against Iceland with 15 minutes to go. Get Chris Smalling up that field now. Get him in that penalty spot. I felt that after they scored that goal, Italy, the German team completely capitulated within it on themselves. They had obviously, it had been built up in their mind that they can't win. They cannot win against Italy. And then they had this brief moment of hope. And then Italy scored, and you could see them deflate as if to say, oh, it actually, yeah, it, we are going to lose. It's difficult to imagine how we can lose from this stage, but we will find a way to do it.
Exemplified by Boateng's handball, because, I mean, he had been flawless in that match.
Oh, he's had a magnificent tournament.
Yeah, he's been brilliant all tournament, and he was brilliant in this game. And then he just did that. And you thought, well, he has somehow, his subconscious has engineered, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, no, we don't beat Italy. Mm. And to make certain of it, I'm going to perform a deliver a handball in the middle of the box. I'm going to do this. and it was inexplicable. I mean, obviously it all worked out in the end. But of course, the statistic still holds up. Germany haven't beaten Italy
in
a regular tournament. They have gone through on penalties. So it still keeps that mystique about that fixture going on. Oh, I agree with Ed. I found it a gripping game, if perhaps uneventful in terms of goal mouth activity. So I don't think it was a rubbish game. Although it wasn't like the Germany Italy semi final with the World Cup in 2006, which was another game that was settled in, that was 0-0 after 90 minutes. But that was a corking game of football. There was loads going on there. Brilliant football.
Best 0-0 draw I think I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
You love a 0-0.
Up until obviously the 118th minute.
You know, it wasn't in that vein, but I still think that it's still one for the ages. But I do think that in general, at a deep stage of a major international tournament, Germany versus Italy is always compelling watching, even if it's actually just them sort of like, you know, kicking the ball amongst each other and talking about the weather. There's still, you know, there's still a degree of intensity about it that makes it difficult to take your eyes off.
Proper football match.
Now, Germany, they've got their semi-final. Their one's on Thursday.
Thursday, yeah. So tomorrow is the Wales game, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and they're playing the host France. Because France beat Iceland.
Yes.
So that's the...
Edged past brave Iceland.
Yeah.
And they're scary fans.
Yeah, they actually conceded as many goals against Iceland as England did. So they're just as awful as we are. Obviously just as awful as we are. It was a wonderful fairy tale while it was going on, but now it's all over and now we've just got to look at the Welsh to be the underdogs of the tournament, haven't we?
Yeah, it is a real shame that they went out. But, I mean, there's no doubt that France were incredible going forward in that game.
Oh, yeah.
A bit scary. but I think that game was just two defences that just fell apart.
Yeah.
On both sides, because towards the end of the game, Iceland were just launching balls into the box and France couldn't handle it. They lost two goals because of that. And I know they probably took their foot off the gas a little bit. But considering what they'd just done at the other end, I thought they really let themselves down. I thought Iceland also let themselves down, considering how well and how compact they'd been defensively across the tournament. So I think what was more disappointing was the fact that both of them just couldn't hold it together at the back.
Mm.
But credit to them going forward, obviously.
What do you think of Iceland at this tournament?
I think that on the whole, it will be remembered rightly for beating England. Quite how big a result that actually is, I don't know. They've been very well organised, and they haven't just been the stereotypical, oh, they've been very well organised, damning with faint praise. They've been organised going forward as well. They've scored some goals. They've done all right. I think they've ran out of puff a little bit, maybe, against France. It was an entertaining enough game, I thought. I still feel that Deschamps doesn't know what his best team is, necessarily.
I think Deschamps is too busy looking incredibly French.
He is very... He's definitely French. I think the only...
He looks it as well, though, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
If you were to say, pick the French guy out of this lineup, you wouldn't go any further than Didier Deschamps. So,
depends who else is in the lineup, but...
You can have Obelix there.
Obelix, Peter Sellers,
Charles de Gaulle.
No, as I say, I think the only tactical decision that he has absolutely made for sure is that Mangala is terrible. I found it fascinating that he would give a debut, an international debut, to a 21-year-old boy, essentially, in central defence, rather than have Mangala. which begs the question, had this other one not fulfilled his criteria, who he would have gone to next, because obviously Mangala was absolutely last on that list. any French would have been, I mean, you're back to listing just Frenchmen, I think, again, players who would get in before Mangala. I do like his name, Mangala.
I think every defender should have a name like that actually suits their game, I think.
Yeah.
They've got a chance, though, against Germany, I think, Ed.
Definitely,
Germany
yeah.
got some injuries. Gomez isn't playing. Schweinsteiger's not playing. Hummels is suspended. So
that was the most outrageous suspension I think I've ever witnessed. I predicted that France would win this tournament because they're at home, and that's what France do when they're at home.
Yes.
And they're hosting international football tournaments. I still think that they will win. I think that they are starting to peak at the right time. I think they'll beat Germany. Although Germany have been, for my money, the better team over the tournament.
But they still haven't conceded the goal from open play, have they, Germany?
I don't imagine. Well, if you say so, no. But now that you mentioned it, no.
They've only conceded that one penalty against Italy.
Yeah, but I mean, France are probably as close to free scoring as Euro 2016 is going to get.
By Euro 2016 standards, yes. Certainly.
So I think that, I mean, certainly the way that Payet has been playing, and Griezmann as well, who started a bit slowly, but blimey, has found is proving his quality.
Mm. And Giroud as well. Mm-hmm. I think Germany would kill for an Olivier Giroud.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, they had to go to Beşiktaş to get their Olivier Giroud, and it's Mario Gomez, and he's now not playing, and there is no Gomez successor. I mean, they'll have to come up with their sort of zippy forwards, you know. So, I mean, we might see Schürrle, we'll probably see Draxler, but we won't see a number nine. We'll see a sort of, like, you know, a flurry of false nines.
No Poldy.
I mean, I suppose he could do that. I mean, he could play Poldy as a number nine. Mel doesn't really play number nine, does he?
No.
I mean, who's he going to play as a number nine is the thing. Is that I can't really. I'm having difficulty seeing. I don't think they would set themselves up like that. They've also got issues in the midfield, and of course, you know, I imagine that they'll be making some adjustments to the back. They've got to make adjustments at, you know, three different stages of the pitch, and that's a big problem for them, I think.
Mm. Well, it also depends what shape they go at, because they changed the shape to go against Italy, didn't they? That seemed to work for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it all started to go wrong for them when Gomez came off.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's Boateng's mistake, but I mean, I detected that Italy started to get a stronger foothold in the game after Gomez went off and the shape changed. So, which perhaps suggests some structural issues that were only overcome by Gomez. And now he's not there, and there is no one else. They can't unthaw Miroslav Klose and bring him in. There's no one.
Well, I mean, you'll know this better than me. There must be a player on the German team who looks sufficiently like Miroslav Klose that they could just disguise Miroslav Klose as them.
I think that if you put a wig on Manuel Neuer, or if you introduced him to a bottle of dye, then I reckon you might be able to get away with that. Quite who you play, well, obviously use another goalkeeper, but I'm not sure how effective that would be.
Yeah. Well, and if none of them look enough like Miroslav Klose, you just have to find one who looks like Gerd Müller.
What they'll do, Germany, is they'll play Thomas Müller up front as the number nine. I'm sure that's what they'll do.
They won't bring Götze back.
Oh, they might bring Götze in, but I mean, I don't think that they will. I think that they'll play Thomas Müller as the number nine and
free scoring, you know, Thomas Müller.
Yeah, well, but I mean, I don't think they've got any choice. But I think that Götze can. That Müller can cope the best with that. In that shape. But I mean, he's not ideally suited to it. I mean, he works better, you know, doiting between the realms, as we're led to believe.
All right. Well, France and Germany should be a cracking game anyway. Mm. And neither of the sides are going to put on as poor a performance as Belgium did the other night against Wales.
That was shocking, wasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, hurrah for Wales.
Yeah.
But hurrah for Wales for not losing their shit after going a goal down as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, not chasing after the game. No. I mean, being composed enough to think, no, we got this.
That was a difference, wasn't it?
And that was a big difference for them, the way that they organised themselves.
Mm.
And Robson Kanu's goal is one for the ages.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. One for the ages, you know, for all manner of reasons. Systems and teams that are succeeding in this tournament rather than necessarily collections of individuals, which is as it should be.
Yeah.
So, Ed, when are Brighton going to make a bid for Robson Kanu?
Let us but hope. Although he's not particularly a high scorer.
He'll do very well at Brighton, then, won't he?
Yeah, well, it's very, very true. He scored four times for Wales. Two of his goals for Wales have come in this tournament. I'm not sure. I think he'll probably end up at Barcelona. I think we'll be outbid.
Outbid by Barcelona.
Again. Every time.
If you think about it, Brighton, Barcelona, there's so many similarities. Oh. Both seaside towns.
Mm. Stripes.
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 Yeah, nice cathedral. No beam up.
Yeah, I think we're scraping around now. Hmm. Yeah. What did you think of the game?
I thought it was wonderful. Yeah? Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And without bringing the occasion down, I'd been to a funeral that day. And we were back at the house. And then we watched the football, all riotously drunk. It was...
Northerners, eh?
Yeah, I know. But we, it was, I thought it was a great game. It was brilliant. I'm really, really pleased for Wales. It would have been nicer if they'd overcome Belgium at their best. But they deserve to be where they are. There's no doubt about that. I think they can go all the way. I don't necessarily mean, let me qualify that.
Okay.
I don't necessarily mean that they can go on and win it. I think, as we've said already, there are two potential teams that can get in their way, but I think that they'll breeze past. Yeah. Not breeze past, they'll beat Portugal.
That's a prediction there. That's not even. I wouldn't be surprised.
I think they will.
I mean, they're missing a couple of players, aren't they? They're missing Ramsey.
Yeah, who was amazing against Belgium. He got two assists. Yeah, didn't he? So he was great. Who else are they missing?
Is it Davis they're missing?
Right. Okay.
Yeah, he said, "Name me a random Welsh name."
Jones is missing as well, isn't it?
I think they'll probably replace him with Evans.
Roy. So they're playing Portugal. Mm. Portugal, we've all agreed, are crap. Yeah. Mm. And Wales are superb, and so obviously, like, you know, if football is just in any way, then Wales will be going to a major tournament final next Sunday.
They've been a wonderful team, as you said. You know, they kept their head against Belgium when it would have been very easy to, as we all assumed, I think, when Belgium went up, that Belgium, this was going to be the story, that they were going to run away. But it hasn't happened because Wales kept their heads about them. Terribly impressive and terribly entertaining game.
Yeah, and obviously, Terry, you put the secret down to the fact that they've got three Palace players in the squad.
Naturally, yeah, of course. And hopefully Johnny Williams will get a good run out and show those Portuguese what for. And show Alan Pardew what he's missing.
Yeah, he's actually quite likely to come on, isn't he? He probably will be playing instead of Ramsey, won't he?
And with Ramsey not in there, then whether or not he starts, I don't know. But there is an increased chance that he'll make an appearance at some point. And I think, have we talked about Johnny Williams on this podcast before?
We have.
Right, so I won't repeat myself about Johnny Williams, but, you know, nevertheless.
Well, you can do, just to ram it home.
Well, I mean, it is funny because there is the stats that, have you seen the stat going around? You know, the teams, the clubs with the most players.
Yes.
8, Bayern Munich, followed by number 5, by 5, Crystal Palace. But the club with the second most players in there.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
So, yeah.
That's impressive.
The actual Crystal Palace.
But I think they might be counting Steve Mandanda, who's only just signed. Because I think it's actually 4, isn't it? Hennessy.
Kabayi.
Ledley. Johnny Williams.
Yeah.
All still in as well.
All still in.
Yes. All still in.
Yeah, indeed. What that means for Palace in August is no one's concerned, frankly, because we're talking about Wales right now. Johnny Esther will get himself a good run out. Wayne Hennessy possibly playing for a contract elsewhere, because I don't imagine that he'll be getting that much of a look in now that Palace have got Mandanda. So.
Mm.
Narratives everywhere. And of course, Bale versus Ronaldo.
Yes.
So come on, there's got to be some, you know, there's these are the two great, great wingers of that Real Madrid side.
Yeah.
One possibly greater than the other, not going to say which. But I mean, now facing off against each other, that's got some powerful shit about it, hasn't it?
Yeah, Portugal are missing Carvalho, aren't they?
They are, yes. Yeah.
So they've got their own problem with suspensions. What do we think about the whole suspension situation here? Because it's there seems to be quite a lot of players that are missing out there, and this is picking up two yellow cards in five games.
Yeah, it's rough. I think it probably needs to be reviewed because there's so few games and there's such intense games.
I can see why they've done it, because they don't want people missing out on the final.
Yeah.
But that's all right when you don't have that second round. When you go straight to the quarterfinals, picking up two yellow cards in four games.
Yeah.
You might think, yeah, okay, you bring it on yourself.
I don't imagine that they could concoct any other system that would be any way less unjust than it currently is, but just in a different way.
Yeah.
I suspect it's just unfortunate for the players concerned, but I mean, unfortunately, you know, if that's how you discipline players, then, you know, unless you come up with a whole new wacky way of discipline, like, I don't know, banning referees, then
it's the future.
You know. Quickly to you, Ed, do you think, can you come up with a wacky way of disciplining players?
That's a very good question. I have to say, I agree that there's been one too many games in terms of suspensions, and they've added the extra game in the tournament in without taking that into account. Quite how they could punish people, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, make them be in the England team or live in England.
Well, there is, yeah. But
play in the Premier League.
Unfortunately, the borders are now shut now because we've taken our country back.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but they wouldn't give us a refund, so we've had to keep it.
Oh, the nation of M&S, and we can't take it back. So, right, OK, we've only got four teams to pick from now.
Yeah.
We must be able, and there's four of us, so I've got a perfect way now. We can make a prediction on the podcast, and at least one of us will be right.
That's a great idea.
Okay.
Well, there's a flaw in your plan now.
Yeah. Who goes first? I think Ed's the guest,
Ed,
isn't he?
Yeah. You're the guest. You can go first. You got a first pick. Who do you think is going to win Euro 2016 now?
Well, as tempting as it is to suggest Portugal, who are both hateful and snide.
Yes.
In a year when being hateful and snide seems to be nothing but a help. I predicted France at the beginning of the tournament, and I'm going to stick to France.
France. So Ed says France.
Ed says France.
Jan, who do you think is going to win?
I was just wondering whether Portugal are going to ruin the whole tournament, go to the end, have it all go to hell, and then just resign and not actually play the final game. It seems to be the way things go. I think in reality it will be France or Germany. Probably France, but I'm going to go for Wales.
You're going to go for Wales? You're going to go for Wales? Yep. Great. Okay, then. Fine. Okay, right. So, well, who do you think is going to win then?
Well, I think that Theresa May's got an excellent chance.
Yeah, I'd love her in the Prodigy video, smack my bitch up.
But in the absence of Theresa May, I think it's going to be, with the choices that I have left, I'm going to go for Germany. How's that, eh?
Okay. Yeah. Well, do you know what? I think you've all been very, very, very cruel on Cristiano Ronaldo. And when he said that the people from Iceland came from a small country with a small mentality, I think that was missed. That was somehow lost in translation. Because you've got to remember, I mean, like, he too comes from a small island in the middle of the Atlantic.
He does.
So this, you know, he's a small town boy. So it was probably a doff of his very, very extravagant hat to the good people of Iceland.
Yeah.
So, and just for that, just for the fact that he's been so vilified for just some kind words that someone who obviously didn't speak Portuguese very, very well, I'm going to go for Portugal to win.
Yeah, fair play to you.
Yeah.
This is not the BBC, you know. It doesn't have to be fair and balanced.
No, no, but this means at least one of us is going to be right now.
It is.
So yeah, I think this is fine. We found finally found a way where we can make predictions on this podcast. And although we're going to be 75% wrong, like we were in the quarterfinals.
If we assume collective responsibility for the correct result, then we'll all be right.
Yes. Ed, you're more than welcome to come
along. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
But if Portugal win the European Championship, I'm going to vote to leave UEFA.
Yeah,
take our game back.
Yeah, we want our game back. But then again, I have a sneaky feeling though that Wales could. I think you're right. Wales could win it. And do you know how they're going to do it? They're going to beat Germany on a penalty shootout, just to troll England completely.
But of course, England will be able to say only team that beat Wales that summer, and we will continue to say that in sad, sad pubs as our country rots around
for another 50 years.
Yeah, finally, making us officially the new Scotland.
Only with a worse government.
And on that entirely factual point,
absolutely,
I think it's time we brought this podcast to a close. Ed, you've been surprisingly great. You know,
thank you very much.
I've listened to your other podcast, and you know, I must admit, you know, it's like I'm glad you managed to like up your game. I think we all have. I think a big round of applause for Ed.
Indeed, round of applause for Ed.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy
very,
it?
Very cruel.
Very pleased to have been on. I only started doing the 200% podcast to get on this.
Well, your work is done.
Yeah, we thought you'd get to about 64 podcasts before you, but just to iron out a few wrinkles, and we'll get you back in 2 years' time.
Yes, to see how we've grown.
Just for all your hot Russian takes as well. but we got the semi-finals this week, and then we got the final on Sunday. We're going to be recording a podcast after that, just to round it up, and that'll be our last one of the season. And then we get a full 3 or 4 weeks off.
Yeah, a little bit longer for some as they go on holiday.
Yeah, same with something. Anyway, from me, Graham Sibley, from Terry DeFellin, and from Yugo, and from Rick Carter, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Producer Graham, he knows his shit.
He knows he's shit.
Yeah. You spotted that, didn't you?
Yeah,
I bet you've been playing that back.
I can hear an apostrophe in here. I think you can lose that. You know, having been up north for a week or so, just thinking like...
Bury it in my northern accent.
Yeah.